Welcome to episode 117 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, a U.S. Latino show where I interview the people and discuss the moments that are shaping our American and Latino pop culture. All right, guys, this week on the show, I have one of the most influential and talented Latinx voices in America, in Tania Saracho. She is the creator, writer, and showrunner of the critically acclaimed show Vida on the Stars Network, which just premiered season 2. If you haven't seen the show, it's the story of two Mexican-American sisters who return to their childhood home in East LA only to discover that their departed mother was married to another woman. It's a bold, progressive show that pushes Latinx and LGBTQ plus culture front and center. The show has some deep layers that explores, amongst other things, gentrification, identity, family dysfunction, and what it's like to be gay in East LA. There aren't many shows like this on cable networks, so if you can, try and catch some episodes maybe over the weekend when you can. But before I talk to Tania, it's time to give your weekly pop culture news recap in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie news of the week. The first Rambo 5 trailer is out. Alfonso Cuarón is teaming with Guillermo del Toro to produce Warner Brothers' adaptation of Roald Dahl's novel The Witches. Tom Cruise will be flying real jets for Top Gun Maverick. MGM plans Boy George biopic. Hillary Clinton plans to form Hollywood production company with Chelsea Clinton. And early tracking indicates Pixar's Toy Story 4 could be heading to a huge $150 million or more box office debut. In TV news, Maroon's 5 Adam Levine has left NBC's The Voice. Giancarlo Canella set to star in Netflix's new Latin comedy series, The Expanding Universe of Ashley Garcia. Elena Anaya to star in TV remake of action feature Soldiers of Fortune. Lala Anthony joins the cast of the Beverly Hills 90210 reboot. And the Game of Thrones sequel begins filming this June. Switching over to music, Camila Cabello to work with Diplo. Guns N' Roses is working on a new album. Cardi B is spoiling for a fight with the media with a new single called Press. Katy Perry releases her new song and music video for Never Really Over. And Juan Luis Guerra has a new album titled Literal. And in tech and social media news, ESPN is betting more on Snapchat. Maluma announces biographical YouTube series. A new study suggests Twitter is making people dumb. Instagram influencer with over 2 million followers failed to sell 36 t-shirts. Did the influencer bubble burst? And Sports Illustrated has been sold for $110 million.
What's wrong with you?
Our mother is dead.
Hi, I'm Eddie.
Oh my fucking God.
It's Johnny.
Because Eddie's good people and her wife just died.
How long?
Full on married?
Just 2 years.
Listen to this. Vidalia has left us the building. But we have to split it three ways.
With the wife?
Yep. We have to sell it.
Okay, so quick update. Season 3 of Vida just got picked up minutes ago as I'm recording this. But in my interview with Tania, she was slightly stressing about why Starz had not called her yet with a renewal offer. So knowing now what we didn't know then is going to make this interview a special one.
Good morning.
Hola, Tania. ¿Cómo estás?
Hola, bien. Aquí despertándome. Bueno, no es cierto. Me desperté hace rato, pero como que mi cuerpo y todo no se ha despertado todavía muy bien.
¿A dónde estás? ¿En Los Ángeles, Chicago, New York?
En Los Ángeles.
Okay, so let's begin from the very beginning. Where did the idea for Vida come from?
It came from Starz. They pitched it to me. Well, they brought me in for a meeting. They wanted me to write. They asked me if I could write a show about gentrification, which is the gentrification of a Latinx theme, a Latinx space.
I had never heard of that term, by the way.
You know what? Before this meeting, I hadn't either. They wanted a show about hipsters, Chicano hipsters. I'd heard of that term. But when they said gentrification, I was like, wait, let's unpack that. And the actual meeting that we had, that I had with this Starz executive that's no longer there, Marta Fernandez, it was everything. Because that discussion, basically, after that discussion, I said, oh my God, that's a show. That's a show. Because,
right.
I didn't have a story or anything, but it was like the notion of that, of another Latinx, affecting a neighborhood that way. And then also they said, we want a millennial, female, East LA, chipsters, gentrification, those five things. Can you do it? And because you never say no to work. I was like, yeah, sure. I've only been in Hollywood 3 years. I didn't really know anything, but just say yes to work. So I went back for a few months, to like create a story and craft the world. And then this is what I came up with. You know, these two sisters in Vida are the embodiment of gentrification.
And I wanted to kind of really tap into your mindset coming into this show. I know you had done, you were a playwright. Lived in Chicago. You were creating Latinx stories. But there was also, I've read a lot about you at some point feeling anxieties about writing a show like this. You had talked about the imposter syndrome and how that kind of took hold of you for a while. How were you able to write this show and at the same time break through and pierce through all the negatives of such a great opportunity for you and such pressure to deliver not only for them, but for yourself?
Well, I have that immigrant, like, we must work attitude.
Right, the Gucci Frito complex.
But then the imposter complex is that I haven't shaken. So I'm still sitting with it, you know? And I started season two actually feeling that, like, can I do it again? Maybe I can't do it again. So a lot of these obstacles were my own in my own head. And I'm open about them because I feel like they're not uncommon for people that are high functioning. Because I'm a high functioning person, highly functioning person, but I still have daily anxiety. You know,
How do you break through that, Tanya? How do you break through that?
I don't break. I just swim in the muck of it. I know that that's not a very helpful thing, but like while I'm creating, I'm swimming in the doubt, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm also, obviously there's something in me that knows that I also can do it. So it's like this navigation of these two forces constantly. Right now, I just took my CBD pill. it doesn't have THC, it's just CBD. But I've been on all the stuff because me and my sister, we're just highly anxious people, but like, we still get through it, you know? But that doesn't mean that, you know, especially now that we're like promoting the show so much, all the feelings of deserving and all that stuff. Oh my God, I can't. Why do I get to be here and not another? Like, I need to just shut that Tanya down a lot.
Right.
I don't know how to get over it. I hope I do because it's too much. It's double the work, you know?
And it doesn't interfere with your projects, like, for example, La Bruja and other projects that you're also working on?
I mean, it's always part of that process, you know? Because the fight that I have with that doubtful Tanya is that other Tanya that's like, fuck you, I'm a chingona, I'm gonna do this, you know? So that is what carries me through. It's such a weird thing to always be having that in your head. I hope it goes away because this is not sustainable, you know?
No, I know.
But it's not, but also it keeps me humble. Like, I nunca me lo creo. Like, I never believe, like, you're great, you've made it. Nope, they're going to kick me out of here. I can feel it. They're going to kick me out of this town.
That is so funny. How long did it take for you to write the pilot episode?
Well, I was recovering from two really bad surgeries and couldn't walk for 6 months.
Was it the spinal infection?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was a scary one. And like Frida Kahlo in my bed, I wrote it. It took almost a whole, I think I had a pitch meeting 2 days before I had to go emergency surgery. I healed and then I walked into my first meeting back at Stars with my cane.
That's crazy.
So I think that's, yeah, it was crazy. And they didn't, cause you know, we had a lot of meetings on the phone and I just like pretended like everything was fine. Like, yeah, yeah, the surgery was fine. Yeah. Thanks. You know, like it's fine, but I couldn't walk. I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself. Like it was crazy. But by the time I went back to Stars, it was like with a cane and I just looked like an OG pimp. You know? It was fun. But it was funny because I wrote that in bed. I wrote it like, especially with one hand, because on the other hand, I had like a tube, a catheter up my arm to my heart.
Holy cow.
So like I couldn't really, yeah, it was real. I did not, I was like, am I going to make it out of this? Because like my surgeon showed up at my house on a Saturday. He was that worried.
Wow.
My surgeon came to my house because the infection wouldn't go away. And all throughout that, I was writing Vida, you know? So when we shot that scene, because I remember how much I struggled to write, not the content, but physically to like write type. because they had to like prop me, and it was this whole thing. And when I was writing that last scene with the Selena song and the two sisters watching themselves as kids, and then we shot it, when we actually shot it, I had a little breakdown because I was like, oh my God, this, because this had more meaning than just, oh, we're getting to shoot what I wrote.
Of course.
I'm like, I was dying. I was dying when we wrote this. When I wrote this, I mean, and now I get to see it come alive. I had a breakdown. I was like, I gotta get up. I was like, I gotta go cry a little bit because I could have been dead right now. You know?
Oh man.
This show means everything to me, you know?
You've said before that there's 520 shows out right now, and you can count on one hand how many Latinx shows that there are. Just today, Mr. Iglesias' trailer just came out on Netflix.
Ooh, nice.
Which is great, because that's another Latinx show that's fronted by a Latino, which is fantastic. But you've called that the fact that there's so little shows out there right now is a form of erasure. And it was interesting because it reminded me of John Leguizamo, who also spoke about this in his Broadway play, Latin History for Morons, that the history books were slowly erasing our own history and our own contributions to American society as well. Why aren't we on red alert on this? Why isn't this a political and social crisis?
I don't know. I know that it is a common feeling, but I don't know why we're not up in arms about it. You know, maybe, and it's not complacency. I won't be that insulting to us. We have been, our identity has been beaten down so much. And now I realize that there's not one identity of Latinidad. There are 27 countries that make up the Latin diaspora. So to say our identity is, you know, reductive, there's more than that. But just to get under the umbrella of Latinidad, we, for so long, we've never been in, like that solo says, we've never been in the history books correctly. We've never, our contributions have never been acknowledged. Right now in history, right now in this moment that is happening, we are so devalued as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
We're being put in cages, you know. I mean, people who are citizens and don't have the same problem, we're still, but, you know, by our brothers being put in cages, our brothers being, you know, and our sisters being put in cages, kids being put in cages. So I don't, like, it's somehow we, our children don't have the same value as the dominant culture children. I don't know why. Our women are not valued the same. I don't understand. I mean, I guess an academic could tell you, well, that's been systemic and that's been the plan, you know, to just like, because with erasure comes devaluing. So on the macro in this country, we suffer from that malady. And in the media, we suffer from that malady too. So of course, in entertainment, that's how much we're going to count. Right now, I have to tell you, one of the little Tania doubtful voices, the little devil that I have in my shoulder, is that I don't know why we don't have a third season yet. With these amazing reviews, with, you know, like people's reaction, I don't know why I haven't gotten the call, you know, hey, you get to do it again. I don't know. And, you know, we delivered an excellent season of television, I think. But yet it doesn't, right now, I'm not going to suffer the way of One Day at a Time that delivered excellence, 100% Rotten Tomatoes, but it wasn't enough, you know?
Yeah, it just seems like no matter what we do, it's not enough except miracles. And, you know, there's 58 million Hispanics living in this country, close to 20% of the population. Yeah. So how do you create a show that will satisfy dominant culture, the gatekeepers? But then how do you create and specifically hone in on what that Latinx person wants in his content or in her content?
I have no idea. I'm not a business person. That's where they have those think tanks to figure out. I just know that for my show, I stay true to the characters, true to their lives, meaning true to our lives, the people who wrote it, meaning the writer's room. Which is comprised of all Latinx. So as long as we stay true to that, there's no way to please all masters, you know, and there's no place to please all eyes, because for so long, we haven't had those narratives. Like, it hasn't been the Puerto Rican narrative, it hasn't been the Argentine narrative, the Colombian narrative, coming American, you know, narrative. So sometimes our people are looking for that specificity because we're thirsty for it. So we police each other, like, some, you know, with One Day at a Time, they were like, well, where is the Mexican version of this, of the show? Where is the Puerto Rican? I can't fault us. We are thirsty for it. We are hungry, you know, but I'm not in the think tank and I don't think in that way. The only thing I can concentrate on is putting out a good story. Mm. Now, I use the elements that you describe. My girls in my show are Americans. They are hyphenated Americans. They're Mexican Americans, but they're hyphenated. You know, they're Americans. So I'm putting out a show about American millennial girls. So hopefully that will resonate. And not just with people of color, not just with queer people. It will resonate with that demographic somehow, you know.
Right.
Also, it's a show about family. It's a show, and it stays true to family. It's a show about loss, coming home. Hopefully, because right now, yes, we want to say, oh, these are niche shows, you know. I don't think Be That is niche, but, you know, I'm not a viewer.
Right.
I would watch Be That. But also, I watch all sorts of shows. Right now, I'm really into these Irish RTE. That's their, like, channel, you know, their BBC shows. Like, I'm super into, like, this Irish. Why can't I, like, reach out to another culture and consume it, you know, and get steeped in it? But, like, ours, is it because of the language? You know, like, is it the accent? Like, I don't know. I don't have an answer, but I know that for me, I just concentrate on the truth of the characters because I feel like that will hopefully break through.
How do you deal with rejection, criticism, resistance,
I cry.
And ignorance?
I mean, right now I'm like preparing for that rejection. I do cry a lot. I take my CBD. I talk to my witches, my brujas. That's mm-hmm. real. I really mm-hmm. do talk to my brujas.
What do they tell you
today?
What do they tell you?
Well, different things. Me hacen limpias. Like today, I'm getting my chakras aligned,
mm-hmm.
Because just to sort myself out, and then hopefully I can ask them questions like, "Will we be okay? Will we be fine?" You know, it's when they tell me, when they read the cards and they tell me, basically, you'll live another week. That's fine. That's as much as I want to know. Fantastic. Thank you. Hey, there was a time in 2016 when I was recovering from my back stuff that mattered. Like, you'll be alive was the biggest headline I could
right.
get, you know? I don't go to therapy, but I go to witches. I know that that's a weird thing, but that's how I've been able to work it out. This is part of this industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rejection, the no's, the distance, the disrespect. Along with other great things, like, look, I get to tell my story. I get to tell this story. That's amazing. That's a privilege. I'm learning to deal with it. Because I was also in the theater before, and
right.
that has those elements there too. So I feel like it's a process. I feel really bad for actors. That, like, you know, most of my friends are actors here. Most of my friends are Latinx actors, and they have to deal with that daily. Like, at least me, I have to deal with that, like, not as often, but, like, you know, actors have to be, like, told, you're not Latinx enough, you're too Latinx, your accent's not good enough, your accent's too, you know, punctuated. Like, they constantly get told that they're not enough or too much of something, and that feels really, I feel for actors.
You know, you're one of the biggest advocates for Latinx representation that we have, and you know, it feels like if you can't make it, then what does that mean for all of us that are trying to make it, right?
No.
So we are rooting for you because rooting for you means rooting for us all at the same time. How do you deal with the burden and the pressure of being such an important figure in our community and society right now?
First of all, people can do. I feel like, especially this generation, that next under me, I think they're going to do it. They're going to be able to, like, break through dominant culture in a way that, like, maybe Gloria Calderon and I are sort of, like, opening those doors, you know? But I do think people will be able to do it. But, second season, when we started second season, after that first season had gone so well with critics, you know, and with, you know, whoever did watch it, I was like, oh my God, because the pressure wasn't so much like keep telling a good story. The conversation was like, I've never seen myself represented. You
mm-hmm.
have to keep doing it, and you have to do it well, and you have to do it right. And I feel like I owed it, especially to my concentric communities that I belong to, the queer community, the Latinx community, females, you know, it was like, I have to keep doing, you know, female gays right. I have to keep doing, you know, the queer gays right and the brown gays right. Like, but like I became, for a couple of months, it really crushed me that the pressure of that, pressure that I accepted, you know, because I understand, because I didn't have a show like that growing up. I never saw us like that. So I get it. So I accept the pressure, but also I was like, I can't let us down. I've relaxed only just a little bit into it, you know. Because I talk to, and I keep talking about my friend Gloria Calderon. We talk every day. We Marco Polo. I don't know if you have that app. And we're, you know, we have like parallel careers in a way. You know, her show went through.
She's kind of going through that right now.
No one better than to counsel me, you know, and also to just be in sisterhood with me. Also, there's not a lot of us, right? To be like, to have to carry the burden of culture, you know, and gender, and make a good show, and be willing to represent. Because there are, you know, I do have other showrunner friends that are Latinx that are, they're like, unburdened by that pressure, and I support them. I get it, you know? They're like, we're going to make our great shows, but we don't need them to be about Latinidad, don't want to represent Latinidad, you know, fine. But I do feel like we need to, the movement needs us in a little bit, you know, in a way, like to, and we say it all the time, like, so that Marvin Lemus and Linda Chavez, who are crafting Tentified right now, don't have to, you know, put up with some of the things we had to put up with. We will put up with them. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. I feel like we're looking at the future. We're looking back at the future, and we're like, it looks really bright, you know, with these like amazing artists. I sound like an old hag. I'm not. it feels like Hollywood age. So old.
How do you know so much about Latinx? Because you speak from a point almost like you almost created it, and you understand the movement so well that you seem perfectly set as a leader of the Latinx movement in this country.
I don't know about that. I'm just living my Latinx life here. So like, I don't think that makes me an expert, but I'm, it makes me steeped in it, you know. It makes me understand it, our otherness. I wouldn't call myself an expert, like a proper academic expert who knows stuff about it. I'm just living my life as that otherized person in this country. So I feel like that you get to understand that stuff in the flesh, because you understand it in practice. You know, when I first got to TV land, to Hollywood, that first experience in the writer's room was really harrowing and horrible. And I understood my otherness right away. We had a room that had allowed for the kind of joke that ended up calling Gloria and me spick and span.
No.
You know, yes, that was the joke in the room, led by the top, you know. I was like, okay, so that's
Holy
what I am
smokes.
Here. Yeah. This was only 2013, you know? Also anytime I would speak out for like, defense of like our identity in the show, I became a bore, you know, like, oh my God, here comes Tanya again saying we can't say that about Latinas. So cause the other day, you know how you're in your Facebook, your memories pop up.
Yeah.
Like, what you were doing on this day in 2013. And I guess the boss had said, made a joke to put a label on me, like a label, and write Latino police. So like, I'm the Latino police, but that's hazing. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's bullying. All it's that abusive.
Stuff. Yeah. But that was that whole first year. And I was like, huh. And I feel, well, I mean, now I know I had to put up with that so I could have this, so I could have vida. But that's shitty. It's like extra effort and energy you have to put into this other thing that is not the writing, you know?
Right.
It's the being brown in a room, or being female, or being Latinx, or being immigrant, or whatever other eyes, you know?
Do you feel things are changing?
I think it's too early to tell. It feels like a shift is happening, but I don't know if it's going to stick or if it's just going to settle back, because it feels like we make a step and then we take the step right back, you know, in every way. Now, there are, like, you know, Queen of the South has an all Latinx writers room.
Yeah.
Has two Latinx showrunners. You know, Gentified is coming. I'm not sure what the makeup of the room is, but I think it was mostly Latinx. Like, that, in that regard, I feel like there's some movement. I don't know if we'll all last, you know, just like one day at a time. Like, it went, like, because it's like this support that needs to happen, that, like, dominant culture shows get that we're not even aware of, you know? Like, this, like, passes. We don't get the pass. We don't get to pass. We have to be excellent. And Gloria and I talk about it all the time. We have to be, like, absolutely excellent. And even then, that's not enough, you know? So I don't know. I know that things are shifting. I know that people are aware, and you can shame people for not being inclusive. But I don't know if a lot of that inclusivity is organic yet. Or
right.
For show, cosmetic, you know? So I don't know. I know that there's a feeling from a lot of writers and the dominant culture creators that we're coming, because I've been in those conversations. Unashamed allies and friends telling me that people of color, writers of color, are coming to take the jobs of basically white men, you know?
Right.
This is a
and they're freaking out.
Multiple conversations. And they're freaking out. And I say, let me send you an Annenberg study, just to show you that the numbers do not reflect your feelings. Those are those feelings, like, because the feelings, you know, it's something like, was it 93-95 something percent of the showrunners of the TV shows are white, you know?
Yeah, you're like a museum piece, you and Gloria.
Yeah. And you know, but so that 5 or 7% of the showrunners of color we share with all other POCs, you know, so like it's not just Latinx 5%, it's
all,
you know,
of
African American,
minority,
Asian,
and ethnic.
All of us, yeah, mm-hmm, all of so when they have this feeling that we're here coming to do, you know, get their jobs in their life, is the feeling is actually unfounded, and here are the numbers, you know. But it's funny. It's just like when you've always blamed the other or the immigrants or whoever's coming in, you know, that when you start to lose footing, you know, you have to blame the newcomers.
Right.
So I don't know. So that's a long answer for that. Like, are things changing? I feel a shift. I feel an awareness. And I feel like in some instances, things are being done about it, but then they get taken right back. And so I feel like it's a little too early to tell.
I know you're writing and developing Brujas as we speak, but
yes.
Are you interested in writing for film anytime soon?
Yes. And I've gotten a couple of offers to do it. And I'm so myopic. Like I described earlier, I put my head down and I work on whatever's in front. Like, so Vida is my vida, you know,
mm-hmm.
And now Brujas, but like, I'm not like one of those super producers that can
multitask,
supervise a bunch
right.
of things. I write I choose every costume. I approve every location. Like I sit there and every frame of the thing I've helped edit, you know, so I need to do it better. I need to supervise better and delegate, but right now I don't. So I have said no to those things because right now, but I think so. And you know what I've discovered this season too, is that I like directing.
Really?
Directing was fun.
What did you get out of that?
I directed the finale of season two. And it was, first of all, I'm not organized in my real life. Like, my whole life is always falling apart. But when it comes to like work stuff, especially this episode that I directed, I was so like organized about what we needed to do. And it felt really like it felt really comfortable, yet not like me, you know, like, I like this place. You know, I also had a DP that's a Virgo. So she's super organized. So we like got every shot we ever needed, and we got a ton of coverage of it, you know? So like when I was in the editing room, I had everything I needed, you know? So that, the technical aspect was fun to learn. And then also just to get to helm the eyes, you know, and to like direct the gaze, that was really fulfilling. And, you know, because I wrote it and I directed it, and I'm like, I think I want to do this in film form. I do. I think I want to direct my own film or something. Just to start off with, to see if I can do it.
Do you think Vida has the ability to be adapted to a film?
No, it's its own story. And I think it's this, but I have a ton of other stories in me. So I actually, if I have the time, I know what two films I would write.
And then finally, I wanted to ask you about mentorship. Have you had mentors in your life? And how are you mentoring the new generation of Latinxers coming into the business?
When I was in the theater, I had, I don't know if he would consider himself my mentor, but I always consider him my mentor. And he's who I turn to for guidance, Luis Alfaro,
yeah,
who's like an OG teatrista. But in TV, when I got here, I was going blind. Now, when I first started work in my first show, which was about Latinas, and I was the only Latina there, I didn't understand that. I was like, I'm the only voice here that's Latina. But then they added Gloria. And then I got a sister, and it's not that she's a mentor, but she's like, she brings this like the power of sisterhood for mm-hmm. me. And then I've leaned on that a lot. Also, another great friend that I worked with is Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, who does Riverdale.
Oh my God. Sabrina. Yeah. He just got like a 8-figure deal, yeah. I think for Warner Brothers or something along those lines. Nicaragüense, of course.
Yeah, it's Nikas. Yeah, he's amazing. And we worked on Looking together, and he truly also, like a brother, not like a mentor, sort of like, was like, look, this is how I do it. You should do this, you know? And so those two were just so important to me. But I wouldn't call them mentors. I just like, son como mis hermanos, no? So I lean on them a lot, especially like, is this contract what I should be doing? Should I be doing, you know, like, it's like, it's that kind of thing. But I, Roberto's brilliant. You know, both those people are brilliant, but also they're Latinx, and they know, and they've sort of picked their lane and be like, this is I'm staking my claim here, and this is my flag. And I, you know, I really appreciate their excellence and their guidance, but mentors know. So the way that I'm a mentor, like, it has to happen really organically. I won't do, because I used to back when I was in my theater days, do those mentoring programs and stuff. And then became like, if I'm really going to be of help, it's kind of like a love story. You both have to find each other, and it has to be the right chemistry. And because I commit to a mentee, you know?
But I think mentorship is also through example, correct?
Sure. Yeah. But it's support, you know, that's also like a mentor can also like, impulsar, you know, push you a little bit, and help open a door for you sometimes, and help you push you through. Right now, a lot of my writers, I'm really committed to them being showrunners. So like, whatever transparency, whatever support, whatever I can give to a few of these writers, I will, because we need more, you know?
We need clones of you everywhere because you're a great representative of our community. And I just wish you nothing but success and luck and health and love.
Thank you. Gracias a ti. Un abrazo. Bye.
And before I head out, here are 3 Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend. Haute Couture, Rosalía. Playa Grande, Sophie Tucker and Bomba Estéreo. El Telón, Jenny and the Mexicats and Vetusta Marla. And that's it for episode 117 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I want to thank Tania Sarancho for coming on the show. And if you'd like to support the show, please spread the love on social media and tell all your friends about it. You can reach me on Instagram at Jack Rico and my Facebook page at Jack Rico 40. Remember, it's only through your support that our show can grow. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.